What's up, everybody? Welcome to our final World Cup special here of FRS PL Podcast with me, Sebastian Noren, and Elliot Niblock. No Pauly today as we're recording. A bit of an awkward time. It's lunch time in Cincinnati and it's breakfast time in Napa. Are you still in Napa?
No, I'm in Oakland now. Beautiful downtown Oakland, California.
Okay, well, still breakfast time in Oakland too, I guess.
Yes. Maybe not time is the same in Oakland.
You know, that. Maybe not just the nice of a setting, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not drinking wine for breakfast. Although I guess I do have mimosa fixings in the fridge, but not quite there yet.
That's how you do breakfast when you're on vacation.
Yeah, that's fair play.
Every day's mimosa day. Okay, well, we're going to, of course, talk about the final, and so we'll start by saying congrats to France for winning the 2018 World Cup. We'll talk about their final game against Croatia. We'll touch upon England and their loss in the bronze game against Belgium, and then, you know, talk a little bit about the tournament as a whole, and then some other fun stuff. But first and foremost, the final, a 4-2 win for France. And after the heavy loss in the Euros 2 years ago, they get to celebrate a win. A big one.
Yeah. Yeah. A big win because of what it means, what appears to be a big win on the scoreline. But even though the game was really decided for probably, you know, the last nearly half hour, certainly the last 15 minutes of the match, like, this is a game that the 4-2 scoreline, I think, doesn't quite do justice to just how good Croatia were, right? You know, the first own goal from Mandzukic notwithstanding, which was set up by an Antoine Griezmann dive, but whatever. You know, they still bounced right back after going behind in the 19th minute, and Ivan Perisic's equalizer was phenomenal. And before having that penalty called for handball, they looked like they were ready to go in front. And then even after Griezmann converted that penalty, they still looked like they were ready to grab a second equalizer through the end of the first half and most of the beginning of the second, indeed.
Yeah, I think Croatia.
I mean, I think they played a very good game.
Yes, absolutely. They did. France, they were clinical in front of goal. They capitalized on their chances. And it is a very, very good team. A team that I still think can become even better, because we said about them, you know, sort of playing their way into the tournament. They didn't look dominant really in the group stage. They did what they had to do, same pretty much in all the knockout games as well. So this is a team. They were what, the second youngest squad?
Mm-hmm.
So yep. There's plenty of room to grow.
Second behind only Nigeria, I believe.
Yeah.
But they, I think you can make an argument even that the only players who really played absolutely up to their potential were the center backs and Kylian Mbappe. And then when you talk about Kylian Mbappe playing up to his potential, well, that's his potential at the age of 19. Let's see what he does at the Euros 2 years from now and then, you know, at the World Cup 4 years from now. I mean, you know, a 23-year-old is even just then barely coming into the beginning of his prime. So, yeah, no, this is a French team. And I will admit, I was pulling for Croatia. You know, this is a team similar to Belgium that we speak of their so-called golden generation. And this seems like, you know, maybe it was the best chance for them to lift the trophy for the first time for perhaps a long time to come, whereas France are going to grow into themselves and you have to. You know, I said to my friend during the final yesterday that I think there are a lot of signs that should they be able to, you know, tweak a few things, France could be growing into their own to be the Spain of the next generation in dominating both the World Cup stage and the Euros as well.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, looking at their lineup here, I would say in 4 years, pretty much all of them could still be in the squad except Hugo Lloris, maybe.
Giroud
and Matuidi probably gone. They will both be 35.
Yeah, but everyone. I mean, Giroud did decent hold up play this tournament, but he didn't light the world on fire.
No, and there's. I'm. positive that France will produce more strikers in the coming years here. And maybe, who knows, maybe we'll get a Giroud 2.0 down the line. So Didier Deschamps becomes one of very few who's won the World Cup both as a player and a manager. I think it's only, what, three of them?
Mm-hmm. And Mbappe becomes only the second teenager to score in a final.
Yeah, it's him and Pelé. So pretty good company there. Pelé did it back in 1958 in Sweden. Fun fact.
That's Sweden connection.
Yep, that's true. Always something, right? Yeah, but I mean, just looking at their, you know, if we take a look at their back line, Pavard, he's 22. Varane is 25. Umtiti is 24. And then Hernandez is also 22. Same as Pavard. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, right there, you would assume you have at least 6 good years with them.
Yeah, I mean, but again, speaking to the flip side and the quote-unquote golden generation, you know, it's harder to feel that way about Croatia, right? Ivan Perisic is 29. He'll be 33 at the next World Cup. Luka Modric, rightfully the player of the tournament, will be 36. Yeah. You know, it's really hard to imagine him being anywhere near his current level 4 years from now.
Yeah, I mean,
Mario Mandzukic is another player who will be 36. Yeah. And I mean, this is a Croatia team that I think that Rebic is the only player who stands out to me who was a phenomenal player all tournament, who is very likely to still be a part of this team because he's only 24. I mean, you know, Rakitic is the kind of player that at 34 years of age, borderline, he might still be part of the team. But it's hard. I do feel for Croatia, you know, although it's still, I have to say that the look on the faces of their players, their fans, and certainly their the Croatian representatives, they were all, at least some sense, just kind of happy to be there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the Croatian president, Kolinda Grabar-Kitarovic, when the trophy presentation was bizarre, right? Like, it was delayed for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know what the holdup were.
And then after the delay, it just started to pour down rain. And yep. Then the only person, shocker, who got an umbrella held over him for the majority of the ceremony was Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. Yeah, eventually some more umbrellas popped out. But yeah, it was Putin by himself for a long time under that umbrella. Yeah, Croatia,
but I love this so much that the Croatian president was getting completely poured down rain on her, but her team just lost and she was still just so happy to be there. I mean, she was just 100% all smiles.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it would have been the same thing if it was played here. It would have been Trump with only umbrella.
Oh yeah.
And he would say, I need the biggest umbrella.
God.
I need a huge umbrella.
Did you see that the French president Emmanuel Macron kissed the trophy right before handing it off to the players?
Yes.
And just because she was so caught up in the moment, the Croatian president kissed it too.
Yep.
And then they looked at each other and she was like, "That's weird. Why did I do that? I just did that because you did it. We didn't win it." She was just laughing. I thought it was kind of heartwarming to see how thrilled she was from just the occasion itself. Despite having, you know, just lost in the final.
Yeah, and the fact that she, you know, she did attend some games in the stands with the fans and all that stuff. So all good stuff all around there for Croatia. And they should be extremely proud of what they did. Yeah. I was going to say
that. Unprecedented.
I was going to say that maybe this core can still make a splash at the Euros in 2 years. Maybe.
I would say that. I mean, I wouldn't pick them to go as deep as the final. Because I think that, you know, and we'll speak a moment about the bronze medal match. But I think that the core, not only of France, but of England as well, is so young. And they also had a very strong tournament. So I expect Croatia to be in the conversation, maybe make the knockout rounds. But it's hard to see them be a finalist 2 years from now.
Yeah. Okay, so we spoke about the game itself. We spoke about these two teams who made the final. What were your thoughts about this pre-match performance. I hate these kinds of thing. I feel like a grumpy old man. It's like, I want my football. I don't need to see someone sing before a game starts.
Oh yeah, I did. My thoughts about it are, I did not watch it. I was fixing breakfast and, speaking of which, making mimosas. Mm-hmm. So I sat down 2 minutes before kickoff to watch the lineups and the match. So I have no thoughts, but because my personal disposition is similar to you, perhaps the growing into a crotchety old man, I just don't care. Yeah. I think the thing that made a splash that I do care about was when Pussy Riot ran onto the field.
Yes.
And it, you know, it's, I'm of two minds about it, because on the one hand, I don't want to get too political here, but I think that, you know, they're an activist group that is protesting Putin on a lot of levels, because he verges on, if not in fact is, an authoritarian despot, and despite what Trump may say, but we don't need to get into that deeply. But you know, they're making a political statement, and whatever your political beliefs are, you know, whether you love Putin, you love Trump, you despise them, you know, that kind of civil disobedience is something that I appreciate. I also absolutely loved it that Kylian Mbappe gave the double high five.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yep.
But, you know, it was actually kind of disappointing, because the moment that they ran onto the pitch, like, Croatia was on the counterattack, switching the field. And that was a point at which, you know, a goal would have really totally changed that game. So, you know, it was, and Lovren afterwards told reporters, I just lost my head and I grabbed the guy and wished I could throw him out of the stadium, you know, which is understandable, because whereas France are like, oh, sure, time wasting, that's fine, we're winning in a World Cup final, Croatia are battling to get back into the game.
Yeah,
so, you know, on the one hand, I understand the political statement. I might even, to some extent, agree with it. And I think that civil disobedience, especially when you're in a country that can be as brutal as Russia, is a brave thing. But damn, I feel for Croatia once more.
I mean, they're in Siberia now, right?
They spent the night in jail. I mean, they have a lot of, like, human rights watchdogs. Seriously, yeah. I mean, a lot of them are watching what happened, and they say it appears that they were somewhat mistreated overnight, which is a surprise, not in the least. But, yeah, they're not in Siberia yet. Fortunately, there are enough people watching to make sure that they don't get there, but they certainly wouldn't be the first or the last to go.
Yep. Okay, let's switch over to the bronze game. Belgium defeated England 2-0. Meunier, early goal there, fourth minute, and then it was Eden Hazard who sort of put the icing on the cake for the Belgians with a late goal. So England scoreless in this one, and some criticism of Harry Kane after this game.
I mean, it's the criticism is understandable, and yet it's still, you're still criticizing the Golden Boot winner in the tournament.
Yeah, but at the same time, he scored, what, three penalties?
Yeah, I get it that he scored predominantly from the spot, but he still had a good tournament overall. And also, like, the bronze medal match is just kind of a shoulder shrug. Yeah, like, I watched it. I woke up, you know, I woke up early to watch the game, despite the early kickoff on the West Coast. I more or less enjoyed watching the game, but I didn't have any illusions about, you know, it is the international equivalent of a slightly more important community shield. Like, yeah, you get to lift something afterwards if you win it. Yeah, you're playing a quality opposition side, but nobody really cares that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that sort of depends also on the country.
Well, yeah, so I think that's the other thing, is that the English press just loves getting their britches in a twist over the Three Lions in any way, shape, or form they possibly can, but you have a 24-year-old striker who is the Golden Boot winner, who is going to carry your team leading that front line for years to come. And yeah, he did he have the best tournament he possibly could? No. Did he live up to what I thought he might do? More or less. Did England perform as well as I thought they would, if not even maybe a little better overall? Also, yes. You know, they'll be gutted to have lost to Croatia in the semifinal, but this is a team that, as per usual in the English press, nobody really thought that they were going to make a deep run into this tournament. And then when they did, Gareth Southgate was a genius. And then when they crashed out and finished fourth rather than third, suddenly the English media is ready to just pounce all over them again. And I don't buy it. I think that Harry Kane played very well overall throughout the tournament. Could have been better. He's got a lot of time to be better. English fans should be excited and proud rather than disappointed and like groveling to find something to nitpick.
Yeah, and I mean, they should be, you know, if you're looking at Kane, absolutely. But I feel like the breakout star for England is Jordan Pickford.
Oh, yeah. I think that's, I mean, he, for my money, Courtois is the correct choice for, you know, the Golden Glove. Yeah. But he is definitely the runner-up. And Lloris would have been the runner-up had he not made that hilarious error to gift Mandzukic a goal in the final.
Yeah. No, Pickford... very, very good. I think if we look at goal.com's and their, you know, 11 of the tournament, Pickford in net, and then a Varane, Domagoj Vida, and Diego Godin as a central three in the back, all great choices. Then midfield, De Bruyne, Modric, and N'Golo Kante, Perisic, and then forwards Mbappe, Hazard, and Griezmann. I feel like that's a pretty solid, yep. Solid 11 there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that Belgium are another team that will be frustrated by, you know, the overall outcome that they've had in this tournament, but should be excited nonetheless about their chance to perform moving forward. You know, speaking about Croatia's golden generation, and although some of the Belgian players in that quote-unquote golden generation are a little older than a lot of France's stars, they nonetheless have a lot left in the tank, and I think that that team will look very similar, certainly 2 years from now in the Pan-European Euros, and then also pretty similar 4 years from now in Qatar in November, because FIFA is a horribly corrupt institution.
Yes. Yep. Qatar, that's our next one. Ugh. I don't want to think about that quite yet, but oh well.
Yeah. Before we look ahead to a World Cup in the goddamn desert, we should look back and say, you know, Seb, you're a little older than I am, and you've been a big fan of the sport for longer as well. So I'll defer to you on this. But for me, this was, I think, the most enjoyable major tournament that I can remember, that I've seen in my lifetime. You know, if we're going to include the Copa America, the Euros, and the World Cup, all three from start to finish, you know, all of those, the late equalizers, you know, just the drama of stoppage time goals, the high scoring matches, the, you know, unexpected teams that go deep in the tournament, the reigning World Cup champions crashing out early, all over just a truly enjoyable tournament. And I think that even though Croatia will feel a little frustrated, a 6-goal final is pretty hard to snub your nose at.
Yeah, it was a great, great, great tournament. I mean, personally for me, the 1994 World Cup weighs higher because of the success that Sweden had and the fact that it's one of my first real memories of the sport and everything. So you know, that one is number one for me, and I think it will always be number one for me. But yeah, it was an excellent tournament. And even though
Sweden had a good tournament this time around too, though.
Yeah, I mean, that was the best they've done since 94 when they won the bronze. So it was definitely a very good tournament. And, you know, hopefully, you know, VAR will work itself out. It's sad that, you know, even though it got implemented, it's still being harped on after the final. And
I think that they didn't get every decision correct. And there were some decisions where you wish they'd gone to VAR and they did not.
Oh, yeah.
But on the whole, you know, I think that it was a pretty big success. Now, actually, let me ask you this. The penalty given after video review in the final, do you think it was a penalty?
No.
Really?
Yeah. He could not control that. That was, I feel like that's sort of too incidental for it to be a penalty.
I disagree. And I disagree despite, as I said earlier, having been squarely rooting for Croatia in this game. I think his hand moves towards the ball. And I think that is the key for me, is that the hand moves towards the ball. It obstructs it from play. I think it's a penalty. I think that this is the biggest, and we can talk back and forth on, oh, well, he didn't have time, but it still moves towards the ball. So I think that it's clear, especially since it's away from his body. But beyond the handball rule, which we can talk circles around in and of itself, I think that the main question for me is these sorts of gray areas,
mm-hmm.
in which, the referee clearly spent a long time watching the reviews because he wasn't totally sure either. And so...
No, but that's because he's a bad referee. That's why. I don't know why they had him judge the final. I mean, seriously, ugh.
Okay, well, handball rule and bad referees aside, yep. I think that something that FIFA needs to do, although, again, I've already made comments towards my trust in FIFA more broadly, not being very strong, is implement some sort of baseline, in which if looking at it for 20 seconds, it's not clearly a penalty, then it's not a penalty. It needs to be that kind of, and not that in the NFL, speaking of other deeply morally bankrupt institutions, not that the NFL's rule about changing calls via replay of, you need to be beyond any doubt is itself hard and fast and beyond controversy. I think that something along those lines needs to be standardized for the implementation of VAR to work across the board. But I nonetheless think that it is a good thing for the game.
Yeah, it's tough too, because it is subjective. Maybe, five referees would have said, yeah, that's a penalty. Maybe another five would have said, no, that's not a penalty. So it's mm-hmm. still that human factor, and I don't want to lose that, because that's part of the game. It would be super boring if we had computers reffing the game.
Yeah, I play enough FIFA as it is.
Yeah. And be like, oh, well, he touched him with that much force, so therefore it's a penalty. It's like, no.
Yeah.
We can't really do that. The only thing I would maybe want to see like that is offside. Linesmen, I'm not going to harp on them because they have a tough job. You need to almost be, cross-eyed or the opposite of cross-eyed so you can watch two places as ones, because from that split second where you're watching the guy who delivers the ball and you move your eye over to the guy who's chasing it, you might think that yeah, he's offside, but then you take a look at it and then it's like, no, he was actually onside.
Yeah, well, but I think that that's something else that VAR is great for as well, in terms of we've been told time and again how the referees have been instructed to leave their flags down when in doubt, because VAR can take care of it if a goal is scored.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you necessarily need a computer deciding whether he's on or off, but I think that that's one of those decisions that, as you rightfully say, in the moment is extremely difficult to get right consistently, but in hindsight is pretty obvious whether or not it's offside. Of course there's a gray area of, okay, well, a player, the ball was sent in from the right flank and then the guy closest to the ball was offside, but then it went to the far post and then he was onside and scored the goal. And did that player who was offside impact how the defenders defended the play? There's still gray areas surrounding it, right? But on the whole, you watch a replay, it's pretty easy to tell, okay, that guy's offside, no, that guy's onside.
Yep. Now, and then another thing that I've noticed throughout the tournament here is among casual fans on social media, a lot of people harping about players diving, about time wasting, and some people like, oh, it should be an effective clock. I'm like, you can't do a 90-minute effective clock in a soccer game. It would take 4 hours. It would basically turn into a baseball game.
I disagree. I think that you don't have the clock stop and start, but it is pretty easy to have a human or even a computer, but better a human, again, not wanting to lose that human element from the game entirely, is that you have a fifth official, who just has a stopwatch, and every time that the ball is out of play, they hit the stopwatch, and then every time it's back in play, they hit the stopwatch again, and then before the referee communicates to the fourth official, the fifth official communicates to the referee and says, this much time is on my stopwatch that the ball has been out of play. And, you know, it doesn't mean that it necessarily has to be exactly that, and then the referee can still use their discretion, right? And, of course, that introduces, like, room for controversy as well. You know, like, people keeping score at home, quote-unquote, with their stopwatches, and they say, well, 4.5 minutes of stopwatch time on my watch, so why are there only 3 minutes of stoppage time? You know, so it's still, there's room for controversy, but I think that you could get it closer to the actual amount of stoppage without impacting the flow of the game that much. It would just mean that instead of seeing between 1 and 4 minutes of stoppage time routinely, maybe 5 or 6 occasionally, we would usually see 4 to 6 minutes of stoppage time, maybe as many as 8 to 10 more regularly. Yeah. Now, I think that this is mostly just something that is a quote-unquote tradition part of the game, which is why FIFA has been loath to introduce VAR to begin with, but it's something that would be pretty easy to change. It would only add a few more minutes, but I don't think that it's something that we probably ever will see changed, because, you know, nobody is the hills that fans choose to die on, be it, you know, casual complaining about flopping or a diehard who, you know, watches multiple international leagues every week. Yeah, you know, those pills are always going to be that offside call was wrong, that was never a penalty, ref, you're blind, and not, we were down by one goal, why were there only 4 minutes of stoppage time and not six?
Yeah. Well, I just have a, you know, issue with people calling for effective clock, and because no. That is not, that will not work. Yeah, it would just not work. And I understand if people are inundated with that from the NBA or NFL or stuff like that, where they have
well, and I mean, those are sports that stop more frequently, so it's easier to translate.
Exactly. You know? That will not work in soccer, so suck it. Don't try to ruin my game. Don't try to ruin my sport. Come on. There are some things
that will not work in soccer, so suck it. So
yeah, pretty much. That is something that I will... Yeah, it's ludicrous to suggest to have an effective clock in that. Like I said, it would be a 4-hour game. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. Okay, before we say goodbye, let's talk about Heung-min Son, who is reported to miss the 4 first games of the season with Spurs, as he's been included to the South Korean squad for the Asian Games. So it's an under-23 tournament. You can have 3 overage players, and Son is one of those 3. And the hope here is that South Korea will do well and that he will be given sort of a pardon from doing the mandatory military service in South Korea. I think it's all males. I could be wrong, but I want to say it's just the males. Mandatory military training for 2 years that has to be done between the ages of 18 and 28. And right now, Son is 26. So he's coming up on that 28-year mark. And I don't think that Tottenham wants him gone for 2 years.
No, definitely not. I mean, I think that it's kind of a no-brainer to lose a player for 4 matches guaranteed, with the possibility that they might not need to take a 2-year hiatus rather than lose them for 2 years in their prime. I mean, I should preface this by saying I am not from South Korea. I've never even actually been to South Korea, and I don't know that much about South Korean laws governing military service. But I would be surprised with a player of his profile and caliber if South Korea did not, in fact, say, okay, your military service is waived because you're doing far more for us as a nation by playing football at the highest level. And, you know, but actually, you know, we were talking earlier about Jordan Pickford being a breakout player during this tournament. I thought that the South Korean goalkeeper, what's his name, Ju Hyung-woo, had a phenomenal tournament as well. So just, you know, I'm thinking of other players in the South Korean national team who really stepped up, and he had an amazing, amazing group stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was a lot of players who did well. I think we're going to see a couple of those move here before the transfer window closed. It's, you know, a good tournament always garners a lot of interest. So it'll be fun for me, who loves silly season, see all these rumors pop up now. We'll see what happens. But no transfer will be bigger than Cristiano Ronaldo's move to Juventus.
No, absolutely not. And that's going to also have a certain knock-on effect for other big money moves throughout this summer. I mean, you know, Seb, I know that you love the quote-unquote silly season of the transfer madness a little more than I do, but I am also, at this point, pretty excited to see what the next few weeks hold, because in addition to these moves having a kind of sweeping effect down the line, as Real Madrid now have a bunch of cash and a hole to fill in their squad, the deadline for the Premier League being moved up to the first match of the season means that from the end of the World Cup to the new moved up deadline, at least in England, we're going to see a lot of transfer activity in the course of the next month. And what I hate is this, you know, the drawn out sagas and the rumors that end up being totally, you know, clickbait media rumors and nothing else. That stuff all frustrates me. But now that we have kind of like a smaller window in which all of this to happen, I'm looking forward to it. And I also admit part of the reason I'm looking forward to it is for the first time in, I don't know, a decade, Arsenal have gotten their transfer business done early. Yeah. So I'm not just going to be biting my nails on deadline day.
No, it's true. And I mean, it's always weird when you start the season, you play a couple of games and, you know, you could play up to, you know, 3 or 4 games. And then it's like, oh, well, now the window closes, which is kind of weird. So mm-hmm. I do like that it closes before the season starts. I do appreciate that. But yeah, a lot of action should happen. Juventus already sold something like half a million jerseys? Ronaldo jerseys? Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's not that surprising.
Yeah, but that's a lot of jerseys.
It is a lot of
jerseys. In a very short amount of time. So, because I think they sold some, I'm sort of guesstimating the numbers here, but I want to say that they sold something 800,000 jerseys all, if it was all last year or the previous year. And they already sold 500,000 of just the Ronaldo jersey in a couple of days. So they are pretty stoked that he's coming to Turin. With that, we'll say goodbye. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm Seb Noren. Elliot is Keats Was Better. And Paulie is P. Questel. Until next time, have a good one. Bye-bye.